Okay. Anybody want to raise any questions from last time, or are we good to proceed? Any lingering issues from last time? No? Let me just make a broad point before we get into the specifics that we have to cover today. So, remember, we've been talking about our default rule when there's no agreement on the amount. Yes? Mm-hmm. Sounds familiar? So, actually, we point out there are two separate rules. You can see I put on the board over here. There's one din of yored l'tok sadeh shel chaver mashbicho. That's when there's no contract. You get compensated for the benefit conferred. Then there's a different rule. There is a contract. We just don't know what the agreement was for. That's hasocher polim stam below katat schar. So we know you go to Minigam Medina. There's kind of a machlokas rishonim. Rashi seemed to interpret socher polim stam in terms of yored. Right? So maybe Rashi actually thinks arsug is a no contract case. Derech HaMelech, coming out of the riff from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, is to say there is a contract, just we specify its terms based off Minigam Medina. Correct? Easy nafkamina, you might say, is there a din of halanas schar sachir? Right? Is there a prohibition of withholding wages? Arguably, if it's a contract, there is. Arguably, if there's no contract, and there's no iser of halanas schar sachir. Something like that. This we all mentioned last time. Then,
can you address?
Say that again, Cole. What was the text message? What was its content?
I said that the Rambam is in a case where, in a 3-4 case, where the Shliach Ben Alabayim, that the Rambam has interesting reasons for holding the Balabayim liable for 4. It's not getting a Medina. It's that, like, the Paulin could have gone elsewhere.
So that's not my reading of the Rambam. I think if it's a 3-4 case, then he says schar chama balabayis. So the rule is minaga medina, right? There's a taromes. There's grounds for a grievance on the basis that they could have gone elsewhere.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So now go back within the view that there is. Yeah, within the view that there's a kol minaga medina. So we said there are two reasons why you might want to go for Minigam Medina. One is that it's a reconstruction of the das of the parties. The other one is that when there is no das, when there is no stipulated agreement, we let the social conventions take over. And that just speaks to the power of social conventions, the Minigam Medina, and their ability to guide normative behavior. Right? So absent a specific agreement, we're not trying to, like, figure out the subjective das of the parties. We're just saying, no agreement, let the conventions dictate the outcome. It's a very interesting way of thinking about it. Okay? Is everybody on board for that dichotomy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think this opens up a whole question, especially this latter view, about the power of minug, the power of conventions, in halacha. I don't want to get into that question right now, but I want to gesture towards it so we could pick it up probably maybe next week very briefly, at least part of that discussion.
Is that a little coming to that?
No. I don't want to cover it today so comprehensively. I just want to gesture to it right now. So you recall, we've seen Minigam Medina in two contexts. What are our two contexts? Where is it explicit in the Gemara that we've seen?
Mishnah
on Pei Gimel. What's Minigam Medina doing over there? When do they have to show up to work? Who's providing who with a meal, right? That's how Minigam Medina took over in those cases.
It's kind of like benefits and contracts.
Well?
It's kind of like the worker's benefits, like on the job. Kind of like the
details. Yeah, exactly.
When they eat lunch, when they, you know.
The specifications, right?
How long you take a break, how long.
Exactly. By the way, I want to point out in that Mishnah on Pei Gimel also, there's some discussion, it's a very famous story with Rabbi Yochanan ben Masia, where he told his son, oh, if you hire workers, even if we give them a little food while they're working, that's not really going to be sufficient because they're B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and we have to feed them Kesuda Shlomo B'Shaito. Anybody know this? Anybody familiar with this Gemara?
We saw it on Tuesday.
What?
We saw it on Tuesday.
I don't think we read this part of the Gemara.
You
saw the Mishnah?
Yeah.
Okay. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya said, oh, if they're Jews, you got to pay them Kesudah Shalom B'Shaito, but you could contract around it. Okay? Then Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said, no, you don't have to contract around it because I call it Minhag HaMedina. And if the Minhag HaMedina is to give like a meager meal, then that's sufficient. You don't have to explicitly contract around it. So this is it's an application of that idea of Malkam Shinagu Lazan Yazan. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel saying that the social conventions are going to override what you're in principle chayiv to provide. In principle, you're chayiv to provide kesudah shloma b'shaito if you have Jewish workers. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is saying no. Kol k'minhag HaMedina, the social conventions take over. Okay, so that's Minhag HaMedina in that context. The Rif and the Rambam applied Minhag HaMedina from that context to our context. What's our context? Just to fill in the price of the. The price of the ambiguous contract, right?
That was the riff, right?
Yeah, that was the riff, and the Rambam followed the riff, Kedarko. Okay, those are just some nice. Those are the straightforward applications of Hakol Kaminag Amadina. I want to point out Pischich Tshuva. I added this to the source sheet over here. If you have my screen, then you could see it. If not, it's on page 10 of this version of the source sheet, the live version. Piskei Tshuva Nechoshim Mitzvot Simen Shin Lamed Aleph quotes a Tshuva the Chavos Yair Simen Kof Vav. So this Shifcha ran away from her employer, claiming that the employer was working her too hard. Right. So the question was: does the worker have a legitimate ground for running away when she was arguing that the employer was overworking her? So how do you determine the standard of overworking her? Yeah. Says the Chavos Yair, Vaday to tell you minag and minag b'nei ha'ir b'shivchoseim lahafil ol hahu. Just got to look at the minag, right? See what the norms are, and is this above the, is this outside of that threshold, or is it within it? What's that?
It's very on theme for pressure. Shivcho running away, she's
impressed. Oh, very good. Just give a shira now, then. Is that what you're thinking? And then same thing, right? So there's same similar question about these other parts of the work, and the Chavos Yair's answer is just, well, look to the Minhag HaMedina and see. Right? There's no specified rule in halacha for all these things. There's no specified term in the contract to provide for these things. So when all these things are unspecified, look to the Minhag HaMedina. Okay? Is that... Now, this is classic common law jurisprudence, right? I mean, you let the conventions dictate the rules. And that's what we're doing here also, right? So, parties don't have anything to say about it. Let's look to the custom. Let's look to the practices. Let that guide the result. I think that's very intuitive. Yeah,
isn't there also an independent iser of overworking, Oded Aved and so on?
Yeah, or an Eved.
Is that what you're saying, that the parameters of that... whatever issue that might be, also determined in Medina?
It's interesting. Possibly. Nice. Possibly, yeah.
Or is it Medina no way it reaches that standard? The question is only, is it some other kind of...
A non-Shifcha, Shifcha. Yeah. A non-Eved, Eved. Kind of a poem. We just want to know what were the reasonable terms of their agreement. Yeah, that's not super clear in the Chavos Yair. My point here is just to say that the Minhag HaMedina rule is writ large, not just in the applications that we've seen. Okay. Ben, you wanna say something?
Yeah,
the standards can be determined by Minhag HaMedina. Okay? Good. My own view is that there's like a larger philosophical issue here. We don't have to get into this now. And that is, some people, especially if you read Chaim Seyman's book, so he has this whole thing about the rules of halacha are not, what?
Not firm enough to be a safe there. Not what? To be a book.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Exactly. If you read Chaim Seyman's book, he has this whole argument about just the rules of halacha are underdetermined because they don't tell you enough about what to do in all these cases. Right, so it's like if you have an actual case, it's halacha doesn't tell you the standard for, what's supposed to, like, for what's working a worker too hard kind of thing, right? He doesn't give that example, but he says, just the halakha has these basic rules, how are you supposed to apply them? And his conclusion is something like...
But he drank this orchid too much as long.
Yeah, well, what's, do you know Saman's conclusion, Cole? You read the book.
The book wasn't good enough to finish.
Okay. Wow. Harif today. Yeah. So I just think the answer is, well, no. You see, the Rishonim implicitly think that Minhag HaMedina is going to fill in these gaps. Right? And that's part of the way the system works, right? It carves out a lot of the basic principles, but it leaves room for Minhag HaMedina to fill in the gaps. And that's a halachic principle. It's a halachic incorporation of the social conventions.
This is
Saman's
conclusion?
This is my conclusion.
Okay.
Oh, Saman's conclusion is the opposite.
Saman's talking about it.
Yeah, Saman's conclusion is something like, oh, halacha is not meant to be regulatory in this practical way. We can talk more about his conclusion, but I'm just saying that's not, I think it's a false, the conclusion is not justified by the evidence because you're forgetting about the fact that the halacha itself incorporates Minhag HaMedina to determine a lot of these indeterminacies.
Why do you speak of it as like Minhag HaMedina kind of fills in the gaps instead of saying that Halakha sets the rule in Minhag HaMedina?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Like, is the code of law.
Yeah, sure, but he's just interested in this point that the rules are not sufficient to fully guide behavior. And I'm just making the weak point that the rules apply in conjunction with all these background conventions. That's the point that I'm making. Yeah.
Itamar.
Yes, Cole.
Is it famous Yerushalmi that talks about Minhag Mavata of Halakha?
Yeah, we'll get to that, Yerushalmi.
Now, okay, I just wanted to raise something.
Sure.
So I guess my question is, do you view it basically as a raya? Is it a function as a raya or against one party or the other, or is there a kind of, in which case, I guess that's more likely to view it as an interpretation of that.
Yes, I think that's exactly right.
Or is Minhag an independent din that, like, this is something you would be more sympathetic to, an independent din that just fills in the detail. It's not that Minhag is brought in court to eliminate ambiguities. There weren't any ambiguities to begin with because Minhag fills them in.
Yeah, I wouldn't phrase it the second way because there was ambiguity between the parties, but I would say that at a certain point, if the parties don't express and agree on,
it's always lurking. It's always sort of lurking there.
Yeah, I mean the point is that the social norms or the social convention. Yeah.
It's the default.
That's right.
It's an objective or rather intersubjective
based law. Yeah, or another way of putting it is that they have normative force in and of itself. It has norm, right?
Yeah, that's my sense.
So I don't want to get into this now, but I think this is important for fleshing out the second side of the importance of Minhag, not just the reconstruction of Das side. So I just want to gesture at two things right now, and then we'll look at them more deeply next week. So the first is Kinyan Situmta. Anybody familiar with Kinyan Situmta here? Comes up in the Gemara Bamitzvah Ayin Dalet. A Kinyan Situmta.
Handshake.
So handshake might be one iteration of it, but the Gemara's case, Yair, do you know what Kinyan Situmta is?
No?
Ben, do you know? Yakir, you must know.
I must have.
You must know. Do you know what a Kenyan seatbelt
is? That's a strong claim.
Yes. Well, is it a true strong claim or a false strong claim?
Probably false in this case. I'm not sure what the original case was. I know the principle is that certain common practices within certain traits can affect a lot of Kenyan.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. That is the idea. And I guess you could also say that even if you did know, it still wouldn't speak to the fact that you must know. Right? That's the... Right. So, the Gemara Bava Metzia Ayin Daled Amud Aleph says that, according to Rav Papa in the name of Rava, Hai Situmta Kanya. Okay, so Situmta is Kone. Rashi says over there that Situmta is the custom was when you bought a wine barrel. So title passed, title transferred when they would mark an X on the wine barrel. That's when like the transfer of title took place. And so there are two deos in the Gemara whether this means that the halacha incorporates that commercial custom as a kinyan, as a binding kinyan, or whether it just incorporates it l'inyan misha para, that there's some sort of curse if you were to back out and not execute a kinyan after a situmta was performed. See, the Gemara here says, Lamai Hilchisa, with respect to what are we saying that Situmta is Kanya? Rav Chaviva says, Lamikne Mamish. Rabbanan say, just with respect to Misha Para. We paskin that Ba'asar Dinehigu Lamikne Mamish Kanu. If the custom is to really use this, then it works as a binding Kenyan. So I just want to make the point here that it seems like the minog hamedina in terms of kinyanim has the power to just create kinyanim where the halacha otherwise does not have them. Halacha has hagbah, meshicha, mesira, shtar, chazaka. But the Gemara seems to say if there's a strong minog to recognize something as a kinyan, halacha incorporates that.
What is the difference? How do you define?
The word itself, I think it's just a custom that they would mark an X. Rashi says, you know, they would put a seal or a mark on the barrel that became yours, and that itself constituted a transfer. And we're saying that, oh yeah. Rashi here says, if the custom is to use that, shirigilam lirshom, aminas shebedavar zet tehei kniyolo, ki'ilu mashach kani. Right, it's as if you did a real halachic kinyan on it. Okay? Notice the Rashba's comment on this Gemara. Shaminan mina, shaminag mevatel ha'alacha, v'chol kayote bezeh, shekol davar shebimaman al piya mina konin, v'maknin, hilkach b'chol davar shenagu ha'tagarim liknos konin. Very strong phrase of the Rashba here. Right? You see that? See the Rashba saying? Everybody see the Rashba?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's deference, either deference to or incorporation of the social conventions, and the halacha just recognizes them as having normative force. Now, so we'll get to what's the sense of mivata halacha. What does that mean? But the point here, just I think this. We, in our sugya, we're looking at a very narrow application of minhag to specify a gap in a contract. And the more you lean into this kind of Rashba Situmta way of looking at things, the more you're saying, you know, this is not just a way of reconstructing their das, but no, minhag in general has normative force. Cole, does this kind of speak to your point?
This Rashba Bava Metzia Ayin Daled Amud Aleph.
Yeah.
I guess so. I wouldn't put the right. Yeah. I don't like this Mabata Halacha thing because of course the Halacha is appropriating the
incorporating. Venue. Yeah. I don't think we have to put a lot of the word Mivatel. I'm just interested more in the application here.
Right. No. I think this is very good.
Yeah, so I think this is a very, just when you look at it in Arsiga, you don't get a full appreciation of what this may be an application of. Yeah. Yoni, do you want to say something?
Yeah, you can tell also the difference between Rashi and Rahu already, just in the sense that the Rashi takes like a very strong, formal approach that the Minah and the Vata Alaha, whereas that means like the Kini itself is happening all based on the Mahavakya does nothing else, while Rashi is kind of like setting in that it's Ki'ilu Mashach content. Like we're still operating with the standard Kinyanim, it's just that like maybe there's an extension of like your Das in some way.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And that like reappropriates it.
You might even be able to read Rashi as in like Kinyan and Bar are about Das, and just Minna here evidence is the Das, and
right,
that's
right.
Really what's important.
The extension of the Kinyan in some ways, we're still operating within standard.
Yeah, Kinyan. Absolutely. That's very possible. Just point out quickly, and we could look at this more next week. Did I not put that on? I meant to.
Can you just tell me what you just said? Like, did that copy you just tried to?
Yeah. The Yoni point?
I think it might be related. But you were trying to sort of on the Beirur versus independent convention idea. This applies more on the convention idea.
Yes, the Rashba.
Could you also see if you look at the Rashba that you know, like it is that what we're really saying is that certain social conventions that kind of lack clear definition, Minhag tells us what the definition of the dot is in that locale. So when we say Kinyan, in a certain place, it might mean not just...
Okay, but that presupposes that Kinyan itself is this fluid term to be given content based off Das. Right?
Okay. So
maybe you're saying a Chiddush in Hilchos Kinyanim, that Kinyanim are just about Das, and Minna can supply Das, which is very similar to Yoni's point, and you're just reading that into the Rashba. Right? Or you could say, no, Kinyanim are about Kinyanim, just we can expand the scope of Kinyanim, they're not just about Das, but there's a general rule about the incorporation of the social conventions into Halacha.
Right. Why would that be?
Why would that be?
The
because we give normative force. Because we give normative force to social conventions.
Because people's minds, like between each other, they're okay giving Kinyanim based on like the way we want to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a possible deflationary interpretation of it.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think another possible interpretation is that it's not just a reconstruction of Das, right? It's that it's something more powerful than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, I just want to see if it could be left open. Perhaps.
Yes, I think you could resist the strong reading of the Rashba. You could deflate that reading of the Rashba. Yeah, deflationary. Cole, you wanted to pipe in?
No, I think there's an interesting question, like how the interesting about this case is that what it just goes to show is that like dot by dot you mean, you know, what is actually going on with the guy in the head. It almost doesn't matter. Like the minute is being used here to describe what, you know, what moves you make on the chessboard, on the economic chessboard, what effects they have. Not as reconstructions of your intention, but as like what particular things out in the world, like, you know, in this case a mark, what they mean. Without reference to, you can overrule that, but the default considerations are not about your mental, are not internal, they're external.
Yeah, I think that leans more into my view, right?
Yeah.
So let me point out further, there's a very famous Mordechai on that sugya in Bava Metzia, Simen Taf Ayin Beis. This is one block before where we are on Ayin Vav, so Ayin Tei. Sorry. So Mordechai and Shabbos, relevant to the Sugya and Bava Metzia Ayin Hei, which is one daf before we are. The Mordechai is taken to say, he's two deos about this, the Chassam Sofer points this out, that Once the halacha relies on situmta to create kinyanim where they don't otherwise exist, so putting a seal on a barrel is not a halachic form of kinyan. It is only after we incorporate the non-halachic custom. So he says, well, suppose there's a custom, a minag asochrim, or minag medina, to engage in kinyanim with the davar shelo baliolam. Right? So normally halacha doesn't allow you to transact in a davar shelo baliolam. Yes? But suppose the minag asochrim is, say here in the United States, definitely people write contracts on things that they don't yet own or don't yet exist. So he says, minag ben adam, so he says, v'yalfa gav dina da makna davar shelo baliolam, mikamaka mahoelu minag ben adam, shenodrim b'neyam zelazeh, mekaimin gam kan sarach lekaim. He says, v'raya midarminan ba mitziya haisi tumta kanya. That you see that you could generate binding stuff with respect to davar shelo baliolam if the minag is that way, from the fact that you could generate binding kinyanim through kinyan situmta. So the Chasam Sofer runs with this idea in a tshuva, it's quoted in the Pesachei tshuva, that, if you are, you could use minag hamedina to engage in all sorts of kinyanim that would otherwise not work according to halacha. Davar shelo baliolam is one example, and also asmachta. You see, it's a huge incorporation of minag hamedina. The other day, and the Mordechai seems to disagree. He thinks that situmta could work to create a kinyan where halacha recognizes kinyanim, but it can't create a kinyan that does more than the regular kinyanim of halacha do. See that? That's the debate here between the two Deos and the Mordechai, and it turns out to be a debate between the Chasam Sofer and Rabbi Akiva Eiger in that Pesachei Tshuva, which I'll point out next week. Okay? That's one very crucial extension of this idea of minag hamedina through this idea of situmta. I want to point out a surprising conclusion that cuts the other way. So if you look here also on page 11, there's a very interesting Gemara in Kiddushin Chaf Vav. Anybody learn Kiddushin Chaf Vav? I know I just added this right before this year. It's a very interesting Gemara.
I've seen this Gemara before.
What do you say? Yeah. What do you say, Cole?
I've seen that very Kiddushin before.
Ah, so you've seen it, but you may not. Yeah. So here's an interesting point. The Gemara says that. There are some cases where you would need, and if you want to transfer a real property, you want to transfer a karka, you would need both a kinyan kesef and a kinyan shtar. It's kind of strange, right? We know that each one is individual; they're separately sufficient to generate a kinyan, right? Kesef shtar or chazaka. What the Gemara wants to say, kesef is kona ad the ika shtar. Okay, why would that be? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, maybe the reason why you would need both is lo shanu el b'makom she'ein kos v'nes ashtar. Sorry, aval b'makom she'kos v'nes ashtar lo kana. If the case where you would need both is when the minhag is to transfer real property with a shtar. In that case, the Torah's kinyan of kesef would not be sufficient until you also satisfy the custom. You can see Rashi.
I just want to be very clear that this is not the Gemara about shtar, it's the Gemara about kark.
That's right.
I didn't want anybody to think that this interferes with the general Brisker view about Sharp,
which I feel very strong. Okay. We could talk about your hangups later. So, right, the Gemara here seems to be saying, look, you need kesef, and then add the ikar shtar, right? You need also shtar. And the Gemara kind of says, why do you need both? So Rav says, well, if the custom is that each is sufficient, then each is sufficient. But in a makom shekos min shtar, kesef alone is not sufficient. Rashi says, lo shanu, dikani bekaspa l'chude, the only time that kesef alone works is b'makom she'en regilin lichtov shtar mechira. But in a case where they are regilin to write a shtar mechira, kiven de regilin b'hachi, lo samcha daite dilokeach ad denakit shtara. So, notice, the Gemara seems to be appealing to this idea of minog. Here, minog is basically putting the brakes on what would otherwise work according to halacha. Why is that, according to Rashi?
Doesn't have das,
right? So here, we're saying the social conventions, the minog is important. It kind of override the halachic defaults, but Rashi interprets that in terms of das of the parties, right? There's just a presumption that if it's not conforming to the conventions, then the party didn't have das for it to be efficacious. Okay. You can see this makes its way into the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Kuf Tzadi Siv Zayin. Ba'med var amurim shekana bekesef levado. When is it true that real property is nikna bekesef? B'makom she'ein derech liftov shtar. Aval b'makom she'dakon liftov shtar lo kana ad she'yichtev es shtar. And as the Pesach Tshuva points out, that's based off that Rashi. All right? Okay. So let me make... one further point on this Minag HaSochrim, Minag HaMedina point. So there's another really interesting application of this. So this gets pointed out by Rabbi Akiva Eiger and Choshen Mishpat Simen Gimel Sif Aleph. Rabbi Akiva Eiger here points to a tshuva of the Marshach. Anybody know this offhand? Very influential Rabbi Akiva Eiger, Halacha L'maisa. So the case was two Jews, Tove and Nitva. One said he wants the dispute to be adjudicated according to Din Torah, according to Jewish law. The other one disagreed and said that he wants a dispute to be adjudicated, let's say in front of some panel. This happened in Venice in the early modern period. And why should the dispute be governed by some like non-Jewish panel? Shekachu haminog b'makom shenaseh ha'esek, because that's the custom in the place where the business went down. That, you know, if you have a dispute, then you go to this like Venice merchants arbitration panel, 1600s or whatnot. Yes, look what he says. Hadin imo. The rule, the halacha, is that we follow the guy, the merchant, who wanted to go according to the commercial custom. Kivan de b'makom shenaseh ha'esek yesh minog lehizdayin kifi derech ha'sochrin v'lo kifi dvar Torah, divrei Torah, minog mevata halacha. Dehevi ha'hi da'asitumta. And the proof for this is that case of situmta, where the minhagim, the minog ha'sochrim, could generate new kinds of kinyanim. So Kivi Eger, citing this Marshach, makes the case that even in terms of the forum that's going to resolve the case, Minog has the power to push the parties towards the Minog over the halachic default.
What about the halachic default?
The halachic rule.
What's that
about? Now it's interesting. It's not here again. It doesn't seem like is the idea here that it's the das of the parties, or it's that the conventions are just so strong that they dominate. Let's see.
This is like very weird that this would be like the iterator columns.
Well,
it's one thing if like Minog needs that like standard for like practices, but there's no like iterator happening. But here there's like potential iterator columns, and nonetheless, like Minog is determining that you have to follow. Like,
yeah.
What is it like not about Minog?
Interesting, right?
Do we know anything about like the nature of these panels, like?
Some people think there's
Jews with not Jews, is a case of kibbalah.
Yeah, very hard to know.
Right. If you can neutralize our cause issue, it becomes much much less of a chiddush.
Yeah, like, but still a chiddush, right? Because you would think that the default is that they should be mizdayin according to din Torah.
Right, you could say there was an assumed, you know, yeah, I mean, people that had to go to this other, you know, off the legitimate alternative.
That's right. It's hard to know, very hard to know. I mean, the language here is, b'malkam shenagu shelo yitzarchu b'eskeim ladun b'din Torah. Right? It's like the custom was to not adjudicate according to din Torah.
And also, what's the... The scope of minhag in terms of what, like, defining, like, what's Medina and, like, what time limit. Meaning, like, if we did a minhag in Washington Heights and there is in New York City, and we did an overall minhag in New York City than there is in America. Like, what's our...
how do you...
Who's defining the minhag?
Where's the domain of minhag?
Right.
Yeah, we'll get to that soon.
What time period? You're saying, like, is it like with minhag over the last 5 years?
Yeah. Good questions, right? How do we specify the right minhag?
Right.
Yeah. We'll get to that actually in a few minutes. So this is kind of our little detour that I wanted to take to pump up this side of minhag Medina, that it's really that the social conventions are incorporated and given halachic or normative force as distinct from just reconstruction of the party's house. Is that persuasive? At least to build up that side. I'm not saying that side is decisive, but is this a helpful detour? Yeah? Okay. Any of our conference members have thoughts on this? Yakir or Cole?
No thoughts. I'm good.
Okay.
If you think this is extreme, then you run into sort of the flip side of Chaim's famous question, which is if minhag is not only distorted, but also could override halacha, then you can figure out what the point of halacha is. Right?
In these Dinei Mavenis cases.
Yeah.
Malcolm Shane minhag. Right, or it's the...
What does that mean? They're replaced without minhag?
Yeah, I guess there's no, like, clear or strong enough minhag, and then, right, so these are the default rules. So, like, the default, these are the default rules, these are the presumptions.
You're saying if I'm wandering the desert and I run into you and I make cow or your cow, like, that's where the amount of supplies?
It's an interesting question. So if you get more deeper into it, I think the Marshach that I didn't go into in detail here is an interesting standard. He seems to say that I think that's what he means by this phrase over here. You have to look and see whether the business transaction makes sense. Is it coherent or is it explicable under halachic assumptions? If so, then they're doing business under halachic assumptions. But if the business makes no sense, if they're assuming the halachic defaults, then they're bound by minhag Medina. So it's like there are these two alternative systems, and you have to figure out which system they're operating in, right? Right now, I'm more interested in the case where, you know, the halachic rule is kind of neutral, or it's unspecified, like in the case of schiras pol and blok tzitza, so then we'll default to the minhag Medina. You're asking, well, what about these more difficult cases where it overrides, right? So I don't have a clear answer. I don't have a formulated answer. Okay, good. So notice that, let's say, the strong read relies very heavily on a certain interpretation of minhag mevavel halacha, right? Which is kind of what Yair is troubled by, right? Yair?
Yes.
Okay. So this comes out of the Yushalmi, actually, in the 7th parak. That's on the Mishnah on Pei Zayin that we saw. I think the Mishnah's on Pei Gimel. About Kol Kamin HaGamadina. Yushalmi says... So one view is that... If you say, Ke'echad u'cheshnayim ibnei ha'ir, I hire a worker for, you know, to be like an arbitrary worker in the city. So... The Chachamim hold that you pay him how much?
The average.
Right? As opposed to paying?
Lower.
As opposed to paying Pachashev and Paulin. So in the Yushalmi, it sounds like, the Yushalmi says, Zot Sameres HaMidag Mevata Halacha. How is it Mevata Halacha? Because generally we say, Motzi Mechavir Alavaraya Chutz Mizo. Right? That's Yushalmi in the 7th parak. Midag Mevata Halacha just means that we're not going to apply the general rule of Hamotze mechaver al varaya. So the Shami itself has a much more limited application.
What can I read, like, or if it's like a separate statement that agrees with the first one, or is interpreting the first one?
Ah, then interesting.
Or you think it's separate.
Rav Hoshea versus Rav Yemi.
Sounds like Rav Hoshea is saying more general principle.
Yeah, very possible. 100%. That's possible. If you look at the Rishonim, so I think the Rishonim, yeah, it's an interesting point. I think the Rishonim, we'll see the Rabbi Meir O'Neill interprets it the way
I do. Is your Shami pretty decisive?
It's what?
Is your Shami pretty decisive in our favor now?
That what?
It replaces, well, first of all, Gemara distinguishes Raya from Minna. That's the first thing. But it also says that, like, the, no, there's no indication. It's the formula, I think it's the formulation I have that you took issue with. I think this.
There's no ambiguity. Yeah, so that's an interesting point. So cool. I think that remember that according to some Rishonim, and we'll see this again. This is what we finished off last time on Tuesday. What distinguishes the case where we go for Pachasheva Poalim from the case of where we go for the average, the market average? Everybody remember? The Ritva's point?
The degree, the quality of performance.
Not the quality of performance. Yes, whether you stated, oh, I'm hiring you, ka'achad u'chashnayim ibnei ha'ir, so you gestured towards the norms, and then we'll apply minhag ha'medina, or whether you just forgot to specify altogether, in which case you get pachasheh v'po'alim. Right? So you could say this Yushalmi is actually super limited. Right, it just means that if you gesture towards what people are making in the marketplace, so we fill it in by minhag ha'medina rather than putting the burden of proof on the poel to say hamotze mechaver al varaya. Right, so there's a way to read this Yushalmi where it's super limited. Cole, you want to respond?
Wait, I'm not trying to understand why that's limited. Yeah. You think it's only worth the cases where there's to settle disputes.
Because you could say all the Yushalmi here is saying is that as a referent of my utterance that I'll pay you like people make in the marketplace, it's sufficient to fix the referent to the minhag ha'medina.
Yeah, I don't feel any need to
So the Yushalmi is saying that... Then arguably, on the Ritva's view, you do say Hamotzi Mechaver Al Varaya, and all the poel gets is Pachasheh V'Poalim.
That's against the Rambam, right?
I don't remember if the Rambam had a position on this, but it's definitely the view of the Ritva.
What's the case? Karakamal Baal,
So there are two paradigms. There are two cases, right? So the case that we've been seeing is like there's a failure to agree on terms because of the breach of the shliach. So the Gemara in our sugya seems to say that pachashep within the different practices, the poel gets the pachas amount. Right, pachashev poalim. Exactly. That's how the Rif interpreted it. Okay. If you look at the Rimul O'Neill here, actually, he interprets it that generally the poel gets the lesser amount because of Motsa Mechavar Alev Araya. So, but how does that cohere? How does that sugya on Ayin Vav, which says Pachasheh V'Poalim, cohere with the Chachamim's view on Pei Zayin, which says that if you hire somebody Ke'echad U'Cheshnayim B'Bnei Ha'ir, Mishamnim B'Neihem, you get the market average, right?
So there, the Ritva's answer
to that is that when you say Ke'echad U'Cheshnayim B'Bnei Ha'ir, you're pointing to the minhag ha'medina. to fill in the content of your
agreement. By the way, I would say, when you say even in the Stam case, the case is still decided according to Domenico Medina, right? Because the three is Domenico Medina.
Correct.
But it's just the lesser Domenico Medina.
Yes,
Domenico.
I agree.
The thing is,
correct.
Also, plugging Stam is always going to save money. Stam is not irrelevant. You can always infer that what you're basically saying is, in the case where nothing is specified, is that the Baal receives the minimum of the redown for the benefit of the workers by setting, you know, any wage at all for the benefit of the Baal, because if the Baal were to decide to pay this minimum, once you're in the world of minimum Medina, it's unreasonable to, so we want to keep it as close to a contract as possible. But we would like not to rely on minimum Medina, you know, as much as we can, because we want to, you know, maintain the integrity of the agreement between the two parties.
Right.
If we're going to rely on Domenico Medina, then the right way to do it is to do it in a way that would best reflect our understanding of what the Baal has done.
Yeah.
He had gone according to Domenico Medina.
That's right.
To take a lower amount.
That's fair. That's fair. So I agree, but the point is there's a conflict between two Gemaras, where one Gemara seems to say, when the Minhag HaMedina is split, you go for the lower amount, because Amos Mechabra Levaraya, versus the Gemara in Pei Zayin, which says, when there's a conflict within the Minhag HaMedina, you split the difference.
Well, the
point. But isn't there a difference in what the Baal says?
Yes. That the Ritva's point is that in one case, there was no specification whatsoever, there was a failure to specify, then we say Amos Mechabra
Levaraya.
That's the Ritva. Whereas in the other case, there was
the Gemara doesn't say that.
The Gemara does say that. The Gemara does have that case. You say, in one case, it's Ke'echad u'Kishnayim.
There you go.
Yeah. But my point is that the Yushalmi here is only in a case where you said Ke'echad u'Kishnayim u'Bnei Ha'ir, and then we split the difference. So you might say the reason why we're not applying Motzei Mechaber Levaraya is because once you gesture towards the practices resolve the ambiguity, as Cole's saying. So it's not really true that the minhag is overriding the default halacha. We're just using the minhag to explicate the content of the agreement.
Using things through the eyes of the Ritva.
Yeah.
The Ritva says something very similar.
I picked that away from you earlier.
See, the Ritva says something similar to the Ritva saying they agree that they agree to do what people do.
Yes.
But we just have to figure out what that is.
Exactly. So, and that's the case where the Yushalmi is saying Minhag Mevatel Halacha. Very narrow case, right? So that just means that sometimes we'll interpret their content, their contractual agreement, which we know they can contract whatever they want, in terms of Minhag HaMedina.
Right.
Right? But we won't apply Minhag HaMedina to override Hamotz Mechaber Alvaraya if it's not an interpretation of their das. That's the point I want to make here. Okay? All right. Everybody with me? Yeah? Okay. So, I want to pivot a little bit still within this. So the Rimul O'Neil here has a very interesting analysis. So why is it that we're not going to apply Motzei Mechaber Levaraya in the case of Ke'echad u'Kishnayim Mibnei Ha'ir? Okay? So I gave you the Ritvas. I gave you this theory of the Ritva, maybe, that it's just an explication of their das, and then we explicate their das, so we should interpret it in terms of the average Minhag HaMedina. Look at the Rimul O'Neil here says. Anybody want to read it for us? Yeah, why don't you read it for us?
I like this, yeah.
Yeah? Is that Peir
As a little comment on the board, the Zeu, Yerushalmi, Shalomu, Minhag Vata Halacha, Amagash Halacha, Ravacha, Kide, Mutim, Yehuda, Ravarai. The Kivash Azov are towing with Pafuch of Ischirus, or Ziti Lomar, the Kaki Vati Mibaraka. The Polo, the Lundi Kanti, I'll call Hagados of Ischirus, Hailan Lomar, Mutim, Yehuda, Ravarai, the Lundi, no Ella, the Hola Pafuch. The Fiha, Von Minhag, Sherak Bali Batam, this were Poland's Pan
Lam and Yoker. Bal Kain, Hayalo, the Bal of I, the Farish Dvar. Balabasa, Yasin Chati Tanasa. Bakan Poel, Shimon Hago, the Frak, the Frakim, the Askar, as Bobo Paso, Charpoa, the Putin, Little Pirish Barab, Yasin Hu Messig Tanato, Kimish Shanay, and Yodan Amina.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of really interesting, right?
It doesn't really resolve this here in the Gemaras.
It doesn't resolve this here in the Gemaras, but why should we ever go for the market average, right, in Minhag HaMedina? Right, why don't we say Mos Mechaber El Varaya? I mean, so the Ritza gives us a distinction. He doesn't exactly tell us why the distinction holds, right? He's just telling us descriptively. If you gesture towards, from a practice, then we'll give you the market average of the minog. And if you don't, then you're going to say Pakashev Kuala. Rima Lamil here tries to get more content as to why we split the difference. And what's his answer?
His formulation is almost like it was kind of like negligence on the part of the parties for not specifying.
See my brackets over here?
It's a nice highway there.
Well, my brackets. See my brackets?
What
the Aleph Reish, that's me. Right, Mash Maktas, it's a kind of knas almost.
No, I don't think it's a knas. I think you're wrong about that.
Oh.
I don't think it's a punishment for anything. I think it's, you know, you have certain tainas, and you, when you, you know, sacrifice certain tainas for no reason, you don't have them anymore.
When you sacrifice certain tainas?
Yeah. Right? You know, you have...
Half your claim. You lose half your claim.
You have the right when you contract to make a certain ambitious claim. You know, I want to pay you very little because you're nothing.
Yeah.
And by not doing so, you've given up that right.
I think Knas is strong, but I do think there's like some type of like worthy of Steve for interesting. Like, what does that mean? I think you think that we can like follow the Minhag kind of. We know what the Minhag is in the middle. That is the Minhag. And each party kind of loses out on their ability to get what their preferred amount is.
Yeah.
So
because there's some sort of negligence,
the
right?
They resort to the minhag instead of getting the preferred amount.
Good. I think that's a nice way of putting it. Conceptually, I think what's going on here, and this is consistent with what you were saying, is that, I think I'm right. So one way of understanding Minhag HaMedina is that they didn't specify, so the minhag determines the content.
Right, and when you have a spectrum of content, the fairest way to determine the content is to choose some kind of average.
That's one way of figuring it out, right? I think Rabbi Lamil is saying something slightly different. He's saying, each party could have, as Yoni is saying, each party could have been explicit to try to get their preferred amount, but because they knew the background minhag, right? So each party said, right? The Baal Bias was thinking, oh, I'm going to get the best amount. The Poel was thinking, so the Baal Bias said, I'm going to pay the cheapest amount. And the Poel was thinking, I'm going to get the best amount. Right? They kind of dispute what our workers, empirical disagreement about what workers are making. The Rima Lamil is saying, well, given the fact that they both know that there's a spread of what workers are making, there was negligence on their behalf. And so they have to meet in the middle. Correct? So it's not so much that the average market norm is now going to take over. It's not like the ritual were going to give content to their agreement in light of the market norm. It's that given the fact that there's a spread in the market norm, each party deserves to lose half their claim. You see that? I think that's what he's trying to say. So the significance of minhag here is not that minhag is controlling, it's just that minhag provides the background knowledge such that we could say each party was negligent for trying to impose their own interpretation of minhag. Right? Kivan sheshneim hava yodim haminhag. You might even think that his position, his shita, depends on the empirical fact that the parties actually knew that there was a market spread when they entered into the contract.
You don't think that it's true even if they did know?
That what?
That would be true even if they didn't know what the minhag was?
Well, he says, Kivan sheshneim hayu yodim haminhag.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying even if they didn't know. So let's say they don't know, but yet obviously the...
Well, it's not only one party knows.
Right.
Yeah, interesting question.
The
ball
bottom want the lower amount, the pollen want the higher amount.
Yeah.
So even if they don't know what the min hug is, you wouldn't say that the lack of specification, lack of detailing implies that then we have to, they're kind of like they're must see in that way.
Yeah, I think even if there was no min hug, I would say, right, you still just say, oh, they meet in the middle.
Right.
Right, because min hug here.
Min hug is not so relevant.
Min hug is not so relevant.
Yeah.
Correct, I agree. I agree that.
Even though he specified that Kaoru Shishin, a Yodin, a min hug.
Well, I think what he means is that, given that they know that the terms were ambiguous and could have been interpreted differently by the other party. Because that's the substantive work that min hug is doing here. The min hug is establishing that there's a spread in what workers are making. Okay. Very interesting reading of Linnea. Okay. All right. Good. Notice that on this view, Motzi Mechaver Ol Varaya, it's not Minog that's really overriding Motzi Mechaver Ol Varaya. Right? We're just saying that given the Minog, both parties deserve to lose. Because each party was negligent in failing to specify. It's not that the halachic rule is being supplanted by a minhag rule. Right? That's the... So,
this decision also points me to a suit. You know, especially this formulation of Hasita and Ata, we discussed, I think, on Tuesday, the possibility of kind of weighted minhag. Like, if it's, 30-70 between the high range and the low range, is it going to be...
Take the weighted average. Right.
I think this precludes the possibility of any kind of weighted average. I think it's going to have to be a 50-50.
Meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of something like that. Correct. Level. I think that's true. That's a good point. Yeah. That's a very good point. Okay, but you see also how this attenuates the significance of Minhag Bata Halacha Mishan and all that. So I think this is actually, the Rimi L'Nil is a subset of the interpreting the Das view. Right? So it's not like the Ritva and the Ktsos that we saw last. We saw the Ktsos on Tuesday, right? Where it says Daite is on. Right? So it's not that we're providing the content of their das based off minhag. We're just assuming they're thinking in terms of minhag. But rather, we're using the minhag to show that they weren't justified in relying on the words that they used in trying to contract, and therefore they deserve, each one deserves to lose. Very different from the Situmta Mahalach that I was developing earlier, where like the social conventions have normative force in and of themselves. Okay? Good? All right. Very good. Okay. Now, Cole, you want to say something? Or? So now I want to dig
in. Everything that you said is correct.
Okay. Yakir, anything you want to say?
No, I'm in agreement with Cole.
Okay, good. And by extension, in agreement with me. Nice.
We are three that are one.
Now I want to get a few kind of isolated ha'aros on the board. First, I want to get out a few chilukim within how we apply Minhag HaMedina. So until now, we were interested in this question. Well, what's the significance of Minhag HaMedina? So I want to just shift now and turn to certain questions about A, how we determine Minhag HaMedina, how we adjudicate between different minhagim within the Medina, and then thirdly, how do we adjudicate between a Minhag HaMedina and a Minhag between the parties. So now I want to just turn to first almost like a doctrinal question about how do we determine Minhag. And resolving conflicts between different minhagim. And then part of this, but also more substantive in theory than this, is the question of what's going to underlie whether we should look for an objective minhag or a minhag between the parties. Okay, and I think that last question is going to relate to the analysis that we just had about what the significance of minhag is. Okay, so just point number one in terms of applying minhag. You see this machlokes rishonim between the Ritva and Ayin Vav and the Ramach side in the Shita Mekubetzes about whether if there's a rov minhag and a miyut minhag, so a minhag that most people do versus a minhag of minority people do, is there some preference for the rov minhag? So remember, the Gemara had the case where the minhag is split. Some people get paid 4, some people get paid 3. The Ritva says, so the Gemara says you do Pachas Shebe Po'alim. The Ritva says that cannot be resolved based off Rov. So even if Rov people are getting four, the fact that there's a Rov people doing four does not create a reason for us to apply the four minhag rather than the three minhag. And he cites the general rule of Ein Holchem B'Mamana Achar Rov, which is kind of notoriously difficult to understand. Yes, Cole?
So...
Wait, hold off. Let me just get the other view on the board. Let me just get the other view out there, and then you can pipe in.
Yeah.
The Ramach just disagrees implicitly. Meisiach Lifi Tumo. He just says, if the minhag is split between three and four, imitgere ruba depolim b'arba b'masa, then shakli arba. Right? If the minhag is split, a majority are making four, then the guy gets four. So you can see the Ramach is not concerned about Ein Holchem B'Mamanach HaRov. If you have a Rov Minag and a Miyat Minag, so the Rov could override the Pacha Shebe Po'alim principle. Cool.
So, my understanding is that you might think that, let me ask this one question. What this thing, if everybody is doing something a certain way, that would seem to me to be a road. What elevates something from a road to a minhag?
Yeah.
Is that like the political leadership of the area? Because I think you can pocket minhag. I think like if the elders in charge of the city pocket, like this is the practice here, and the minhag is normative. Road is like a way to establish, like, you know, an empirical, if you have to like decide, you know, you need to make a decision about, you know, the status of, you know, whatever, like, you know, it's sort of a head thing.
Yeah.
Since you don't want to have a lacuna in the system, you instead, you sort of rode the brute force way of doing that. Many are not like that.
Yeah. That's a very interesting point. I mean, you're saying what elevates...
So you can have a minute nobody follows, and you can have a road that doesn't have a minute. I just want to try to get some clarity on why minhag is not a, because that's like the obvious, that's the, you know, that's the Shana Hollis guy question.
Correct.
Like, it ain't open to the not part of it, right?
Right. Very good. So my sense, and I don't think there's much written on this, is that minhag is really the practice, it's not the rule. So you're going to follow the practices. If there's an overwhelming rove, so then I think we're going to say, that's what the minhag is. Only a few random people. There's no regulatory consistency to the miut. Then the rove is the minhag, and just like a few people act contrary to it. But I think if there are just like two established norms as to what's done, more people happen to fit into the class of norm A than fall into the class of norm B, but they're like both legitimate, they're both have some sort of consistency, then the Ritva is saying there's no preference for the rove one. Does that answer your question?
I have to know the word like legitimacy is doing in that. Meaning, like, I don't psychologically what it is.
Here. Look, some people take Lyft. Some people take Lyft. Some people take Uber. Do more people take Uber? Maybe, but, you know.
Basically,
if
getting is something you can hold me to account for,
that's right.
Right? The minute in beer to wear a hat and a jacket, robe and why you to wear a, you know, a blue shirt as opposed to a white one or something like that.
That's right. That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah, I agree with
that. Now I want to kind of party in AJRTIAN rule of recognition.
Yes, I was going to say that. Very good. Yeah, you could see my halachic.
You could see my
halachic positivism here, just in speaking of the conventions, right?
Right. Exactly. For what counts as, I'm not a meta rule of.
I know.
People have been written about, you know, how does the minhag get established?
That's right.
The minhag over, you know, like, you know, everybody. It could be age as opposed to common law, ancient usage or the standing, in Burke in the reflections on the, Burke on the revolution and the reflections of the revolution in France said, uses phrases like, the standing policy of the kingdom was ancient practice of the kingdom.
That's right.
Age is what gives it, that's the kind of the inherent conservatism of legal system.
That's right.
Even when it's, I would want to know a little bit.
Okay. I'll just give the Pirush Rashi in what you were saying. So, H.L.A. Hart, you know Hart was Jewish, Cole? Did you know that?
He's a
good
lawyer.
Oh, okay. So H.L.A. Hart...
It's a good lawyer to be Jewish.
Okay, so H.L.A. Hart has a theory about what law is. He wrote a book called The Concept of Law. And he's responding to these earlier views. I think this guy Austin held the earlier view that law is just like command of the sovereign backed up by the threat of punishment. And Hart says, no, that's not what law is. Law is just like the rules that are recognized by the practitioners of law to be the rules of society. It's called the rule of recognition. It's just that, people, these are social conventions, they're practices that come out of courts and legislatures and things like that. And there's a rule of recognition that judges and maybe some lay people, they can recognize these as the legal rules. And so Cole's asking, what's the standard for something being a minug if it's not rov or miyud, according to the Ritva? And he's saying that, something like this rule of recognition, you just look and see, what could people recognize as a legitimate practice? Right, Cole, is that your point?
Yeah.
But here it's even more mild point. We're just saying, if minog is not determined by rov, what's going to determine minog? Right? Because the Ritva wants to say it's not what's done by majority of people. You have to look around and see what's the recognized custom, what people recognize. So
the question is, for the Ritva, a majority of people recognize the practice
four,
and a minority of people recognize the practice 2-3. And either of them have the self-awareness to be aware that other people recognize alternative practices.
I think the Ritva is saying that...
Or there are different strata in the community.
A way of putting it is that everyone would recognize, for the Ritva would say, everyone would recognize that these two practices are legitimate, or these two practices are done. It may happen to be the case that most people are paid for. Right? But there's no presumption that we should follow the minhag of what most people do. What's important is that something is recognized as a minhag. The rule to go for Pachas Shebapolim is stronger than the rule of Holchanach Arov. The Ramach seems to disagree, right? The Ramach thinks once you have a practice that's performed by a majority of the people, that's going to be controlling. You see that? That's in the host of the Ramach and the Ritva. Why do you look confused?
Me?
Yeah. Is that clear? Yoni, is that clear?
I think that's clear what's written. I think it's like a question of there is a range of gander
100%.
Price. And the question is which one? How do you determine which is most binding?
Correct. I think it'd be interesting, I don't have any thoughts on this now, to see, does this machlokas align with any important conceptual distinction about the significance of minhag? Is it just a machlokas that holchem b'minach arov and how to apply that? Or maybe is this dispute here about, whether minhag is evidentiary of the das of the parties versus the social norms having normative force to determine what the value or what the outcome should be, independent of reconstructing the das of the parties. I don't know, do you have any thoughts on that? Or
Why would it matter either way?
Well, you might think that sometimes your das is on the rove. Right? Or if there's a rove, that's a reason to favor the party that's on the rove side. Something like that. Right, so for example, remember the Ramah was, remember...
You need to get the Da from it, too.
Okay, so you think it's...
Da, either. So then, like, the Da, since there is a mute, which is significant, so, like, Da's on the lower mute, but the...
Yeah, that's right, that's what I was thinking, right? So it doesn't really connect one way or the other.
Yeah, I need to give it a little
bit. Okay, it's possible. That's good. Okay. So that's with the with respect to the question of, do we follow Rove in deciding the Minog? Shulchan Aruch raises two further interesting questions. Oh, really three, and the third one's related to Kol. Should I put them up over here for us? So what if there are different ways of specifying the Minog? So you can see the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Lamed Aleph. It's based off of Sugya and Asochras HaPoalim. So what happens if there's no Minog at all in the town? What do you do then? So the Shulchan Aruch here says, and it's now on the board, Lo haya minag be'ir, aval rov anshei ha'ir bo mimakam sheyesha minhag. Hazinan basar minag ha'ir shebo misham. Yair, this relates to your point that we do follow what rov of the people take to be the minhag. Not
but you could,
the practice that rov people fall into.
It's a little fuzzy, though, because it seems like minag is a property of the people. Right? Like, it's not necessarily the case that if, you know, a majority of people move to a new city, that they expect things in the new city to work in the same way as the old
right,
city.
Right, correct.
But nonetheless, the people have this property called having had a certain minhag.
Yeah.
It's like kovan in a certain way. And
so this is really interesting, right?
It assumes that if you ask some person in the city, oh, what do you do around here? They would tell you,
nothing.
I don't really know.
Right. That's a really interesting
point. And nonetheless, there's a minhag.
Yeah, this is a really interesting point. So you see...
So that actually, again, it's like a social recognition theory, because there is no social recognition of a normal...
That's actually interesting.
More interesting than I thought it did.
So, yeah, so the Shomar is saying, based on the Gemara, if you live in a town, there's no minhag, I guess, how much work you're paying. So what should we do? Let's look to the minhag of the town where most of the people here came from.
What does that mean? There's always... What do you mean to claim that there's...
He's the first worker in town. Okay, no one's ever been hired.
It's like a random case. It's a problem.
Yeah. Are there new practices? You're the first Uber driver.
Right. So you say min. So the question would be like, is minhag literal? See what people in the town have done, or what they would theoretically do.
Well, I think you're saying we don't even know that they would theoretically apply their old minhag in here. Right, I hear that's part of your...
Right, my point is that minhag seems to be discrete. Each person possesses something called a minhag.
Right.
Even though they wouldn't necessarily identify it as a minhag here. Because once they would say, this is what we do here, it's no longer a city that no longer has a minhag.
Yeah.
Theoretical minhag that everyone sort of has.
I don't know that it's theoretical, I think it's personal. Each person has this thing called...
So whether or not they employ...
They have a minhag ancestry.
Right, like I personally used to do this. It's possible that, predictively speaking, we...
Or even, there's a communal minhag ancestry, even if, right, it's not actually applied. That's kind of what's interesting here. And so you might think, well, if it's about the actual conventions dictating the outcome, dictating the rule, then... It's not obvious that the ancestral minhagim should be dispositive, right?
Unless the Shulchan Aruch's goal is just, let's take the city without a minhag
and give generate it, a minhag. Figure out what its minhag is.
Right, and as soon as the Shulchan Aruch posited this, it became...
Yeah, that's what I assume. That's what I assumed, right? When I was reading this initially, it's an interesting question. No, what are you doing? There's no minhag. You apply the earlier minhag. I think your point actually makes this more interesting. You're saying maybe this is a case where... There actually is no present minhag to default onto. And so we just have to reach to like some other thing to resolve the dispute. Even if that's some other thing is not the relevant norm to decide it.
How's that different from what you said? How's it different from what you just said?
Because what I was saying is like, well, if New York has no custom. Right. What I was thinking is that it's impossible to say New York has no custom. Because even if New York has no custom, its custom is just the English custom where all the New Yorkers originally came from. No, it's not true. Historically, it was more diverse than all of them from England. Okay.
The Dutch. Multiple
than that. Right. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're saying, no. It's factually possible that as New Yorkers, we have no minhag medina to default on. There's some other reason why, if we have no rule, the halacha points us to the English rule.
Well, I'm thinking that it's more like that, so like when the Sabbath in the state of Israel.
Yeah.
And like lots of groups coming in, and like it's sort of become like Sephardi Minhag has sort of become Minhag Israel in certain ways. Whereas it's big, is it new Minhag is there? Is there like Minhag is Israel? Is it,
yeah.
Should adopt people's majority of cultures?
Yeah.
Minhags are.
That's an interesting question. I don't have the answer to that. The Gemara itself says, yeah, you go for the minhag of rove people. I just think this is an interesting hechitimtzi where we're going to adjudicate based off a prior minhag, even if it's not obviously the governing minhag for the parties. See that? So my initial read, it was just saying, well, this is a chiddush as to what the governing minhag is. And you're saying, no, maybe there's no governing minhag here, but there's some other reason why we go to the ancestral.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I think both are plausible.
Yeah, I don't know if you're more right. I'm saying you're more interesting.
I don't think it.
Right? Yeah, Yoni, is that clear?
Yeah, I think in some ways that like the two different approaches hinges a little bit on like this question that we're dealing with is like relating to the das of the parties, or there's some type of objective minhag.
Oh, now you're into it. Now you want to think
about das, or it could be like there really was no minhag that exists in the town, and yet we follow like what their ancestral minhag was, just because like
as a reconstruction of their diet.
Yeah,
right.
But
if you think that we follow some objective minhag,
there's no objective minhag here.
You have to presume that there is some type of minhag that exists here.
Yeah, I like that. I kind
of
like that.
If you're getting the mia, it's not a reasonable reinterpretation of your das. It's just not. Right? On what grounds should I assume that my das is the same as Ruban Jay here?
Okay, that's like a general question between Rove. That's nothing to do with like a minhag. That's not pertaining to this question. It's a general question.
No, but if you have a general social minhag, it's reasonable to assume that people in the city are part of the minhag, even if not everyone necessarily is. But here, we know that not everyone.
But you could say, you can make kind of the Remul O'Neill point within Yoni's idea that upon whom is the burden placed to specify, right? And then.
So you're saying, right, it could be the Mute's job is to be aware of hiring conventions to the point where he would know if there was
exactly.
A minhag.
Right, okay. Something like that. Right? Yeah, but I kind of like it. It's definitely more interesting.
Right.
Right? It's not that we should have a prejudice towards the interesting, but it is more interesting. Okay, second point in the Shulchan Aruch here, which is important. You go from a place, what happens if the, it's kind of, it's actually not so clear what the Shulchan Aruch case is. Halach mi makom, coming out of the Nemukei Yosef in Sochar Zepalim. So what happens if you're halach mi makom shenagu lahashkim lahariv, la makom shenagu shalol lahashkim lahariv? Oh, ibcha. So, not clear. Is this case where, so I hired, I think the case has got to be that.
You were together, you hired, and then with you.
Sounds like you're hiring one town, and then the work is somewhere else.
Yeah. Maybe that's the case, right?
You
so it's like.
Work to work in Boston.
That's right. So I travel to New York to hire somebody to work in Boston, kind of thing. Right? Or I travel to Israel to hire a Limudei Kodesh teacher to work here. Right? So which minhag is going to govern? The minhag of the place where I hired him or the minhag of where he was expected to perform the work? Interesting question, right? And here also, I'm not sure if it clearly bears on the reconstruction of das versus the norms themselves take over. Yes. Yeah, Ben.
My intuition is a little more towards reconstruction because presumably when you're figuring out the payment, I guess the same case is you're in a different place than you were originally for the deal. So meaning if...
But I was hiring you, so if I hire you in Israel to work in America, are you expecting an Israeli salary or an American salary?
So, right, so that's the question. But now we're in America, and I have to pay me, and now we're saying, well, if it was an independent factor, then they could use even if you use any independent factor to push it there. Suggest why would you doubt to go to the one in Israel where the case was made? Because sort of while they were in Israel, it was on their minds.
They're bound.
Israel, this is where this is like the word, payment in Israel means something different than it does in America.
Yeah, I would have said the exact. I would have said a little. I would have said maybe.
The opposite?
Yeah, right. If it's the das, then the expectation is I'm working for you in America or something.
So
but if it's like the norms take over you made an agreement without specifying, so now, like, you're just governed by the local norms. And those local norms fill in the content.
The local norms are not where you are now, the local norms are where you're willing to make the deal.
Right. The local norms of where you made the deal. So if it's about DAS, you say the DAS of the parties is they're going to work in America, right? So I should get an American salary. But if you think if it's...
I think the case is just too big here.
I feel like Monty has nothing to do with DAS versus it. I feel like it's a much more interesting question, like a different question about whether or not, like, what is COVEA in terms of, like, work establishing and hugging and the rules such? Do we care about the agreement per se or the actual work?
Uh-huh.
Like, what is more significant in establishing and hugging and other rules like that?
So I would say, like, this is a function of, I guess, is the what substantive work is the Minug? This is what you're saying, right? Is Minug trying to give us or resolve ambiguities or give us an interpretation of the agreement? Is Minug functioning on the agreement? Is Minug a modifier on the agreement, or is like Minug a modifier on like what kinds of work the worker has to do?
In some ways. I think we talk about like which is more COVEA, the contract or the actual work.
Kind of like the yo-rate versus the contract theory.
Like the actual production, the actual work performed.
It's interesting.
Or like the verbal signed legal document that's, you know, created.
That's a very good point. So you want to say that kind of the tension here is whether the Minug operates on the agreement or does the Minug operate on the conditions of labor or something?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it's very it's interesting.
It's like, I think, a different question than DAS versus... Like,
it might. I mean, I would say if it's DAS... So I would say in one way, I would say if it's DAS, it's clearly got to be about the agreement. Right? It's clearly an interpretation of the agreement because that's what we're interpreting. But if the norms are just filling in the content... Like you're defaulting to what the norms say, then it could be either about the agreement or about the substantive labor. So I would say it actually is determined in one direction, right? Because if it's about the DAS, it can't be about the working conditions.
Right.
So it is related in that more limited way. All right, very good. That was a very good analysis here. One further point in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says. And you can see, by the way, if you look through the Makoros here, there's some like interesting permutations of this idea of the different places thing. There are also some permutations where the balabais is in one place and the workers in another place. Just point you to it very quickly. In the postgame, this comes up all the time in Shadchanah's cases. So you have like a Shadchan in Israel who's setting up people in America, or like an American Shadchan who's setting up people in Israel. And there's always a machlokes, well, does a Shadchan get paid American rates or Israeli rates? If there was no specification in advance, so like which Medina is controlling. So everyone really points to this Ramah here, citing the Nukei Yosef and the Yishalmi, and it generates a lot of like discussion. So again, I don't know if it weighs in, but you look here in this footnote here that I put on the Mar Makomo sheet, there's a lot of the discussion based on this Jew of the Panami Eros, Bishadchan Shashidech Mimakam Shanosna and Schar Shadchan is Beyoger, American Shadchan, and the Mokam Shash Schar Vupachos. I guess the couple here was set up in Israel or something. So that raises similar questions. The third point, so Ayin Sham, I don't want to go into it here, but you could look more into those tshuvas here that are on the Makoro sheet. The third point that the Shulchan Aruch makes is. This is based on the Tshuva Sarivash. Eino kare minog ela davar hashchiach v'nasa harbe pa'amim. Ela davar she'eino nasa rak pa'am achas o shnei pa'amim eino kare minog. This bears on Cole's point, you know, what actually constitutes a minog. And the Ramah here, Sarivash, Rivash wants to say, well, for it to be a minog, it's got to have a certain amount of regularity. Right? It's shchiach v'nasa harbe pa'amim. But if it's irregular, or it's done... it's only been done a few times, that's not going to rise to the level of a Minhag of Medina, at least. Okay? I think that's very intuitive. That makes a lot of sense. Okay? Good. So maybe we should stop here. The next time, we'll transition to this related question about... Minna Kamathina versus the more narrowly tailored Minna relating to the parties or the past practice of the parties. So let's wrap this up on Tuesday. So I want to wrap up the whole which Minna, what constitutes a Minna discussion. We'll wrap that up Tuesday. Maybe we could do half the day on Tuesday for that topic. Then I want to wrap up this whole sugya and get
you through. Are currently the only person in this conference.
By get here. Then I want to get into this question about what exactly constitutes a meeting of the minds? Like, when is there actually a hesken between the parties? You see, our whole Gemara turns on that question. Oh, is the Shliach Nishana the grace for better or for worse? So I want to flesh out that question more explicitly, because all these questions of Minna Kamathina come up when there's no meeting of the minds, right? At least no explicit meeting of the minds. So I want to push a little bit deeper into what constitutes the meeting of the minds. This will take us back to the first Yerushalmi that we saw in the sugya. You know, one party says, I'll hire you like the rest of my workers are getting paid. How much are they getting paid for? Right? And they're really getting paid five. So is there a meeting of the minds in anything there? Can there be meeting of the minds on a boundary without meeting of the minds on a specific amount? Which is similar to the point that Gabe made yesterday. Okay, so we're going to wrap up Minna Kamathina, subjective versus objective Minna. Then we get hopefully wrap up also the question of what constitutes as a acceptance, meeting of the minds. Then we move on to our next sugya. All right. Shkach.